It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And on today's show, we have Shai. Hey, Shai.
Hi, Shai.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. This is another one of our guests that we feel like is overdue, like just like community adjacent, like one of those people like we got to get Shai. Like you've been on the list. So thank you for joining us today. And before we get into it, do you mind introducing yourself officially to our listeners and giving us a background on how you got into photography?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much again for having me. I'm honored to be on. Truly, it's so lovely to be part of this incredible analog community and, you know, be connected to people like you who keep it alive. And it's amazing. To anyone who I don't know, probably many people, I'm Shai. I'm based in Brooklyn, New York, and I primarily shoot Polaroid, also analog medium format or 35 millimeter. Yeah, how I got into photography, it's been kind of I'm sure a lot of people have kind of non-conventional stories. Mine is similar, but also very generational. So that'll make more sense in a moment.
I love that.
I want to say I kind of always in my life felt like I, you know, always was a creative person, never had a direct outlet for it. I tried, you know, playing instruments, drawing, painting. I was in theater for a while, and little things would stick, but I never really feel like I felt that outlet, right? And this was, you know, fast forward, I was in college. I was in school in North Carolina at UNC, and I was majoring in communication, so not directly in the art world, but that was just around the time that 2012 year when Instagram came out as an app.
Uh-oh.
And I remember like popping on there, taking a photo of like a half-eaten sandwich, and then like sepia filter of like, and I was like, "Oh, this is interesting." And slowly thereafter, as like Instagram started kind of popping off, all these little editing apps came out. I don't know if anyone would be familiar where there was like Afterlight, Mextures.
Oh yeah, Afterlight,
old school, right? And I got really into these apps. I would like take a photo of like a balloon and I'd like pop into like Afterlight, reflect it, like do crazy like swirl effects, add like rainbows on top of it. And it was funny because I was actually starting to connect with people on Instagram that were really into the things I was doing, even though it was all just very silly and not with any purpose, you know? I was just enjoying playing around with these photo editing apps. And there came a point where I was like, maybe I could actually try like having a real camera. So, of course, the rite of passage, I got a Canon Rebel T2i.
Yes.
Just the classic move. And I started taking photos there and really trying to educate myself on aperture and exposure settings and, you know, way more than just like iPhone 5 photography.
Right.
And I love that. I was obviously very into the early days of like high bokeh, like, you know, trying to do a lot of like depth of field work. And then obviously the natural place from there was like to get into Adobe programs like Photoshop and see different ways how to manipulate photos. And again, I'm always been kind of a high contrast, high color, high effect person. And I got into that for a while and just hobby for a long time, taking photos of my friends, taking photos of nature, a lot of landscape stuff, traveling, which was awesome. And it was shortly around that time, maybe 2014, 2015, that I was like, oh, getting into film would be cool. I was on Flickr seeing kind of the results that other people. I was a Tumblr girl. So
Tumblr.
The types of photos on there being like, how are people taking these? What's up? And I bought myself a Lomography La Sardina cam.
Yes.
Really kind of, you know, I mean, cheapo little plastic box camera. And I remember I shot my first roll of film through that. And I got the results back. Half the roll was blank. I have no idea what I did. And the other photos were a little underwhelming, I would say. And so I was kind of like, okay, maybe not. Maybe I should stick to what I've been doing because I don't really see. This isn't really what I thought I was going to get from this. But obviously with a La Sardina, it's a point and shoot that's completely mechanical. No flash, nothing. So,
yeah,
I mean, I didn't really know better at the time. I was like, I don't know. Maybe this film thing isn't for me, I guess. So I put it down for a while, like years. And then through kind of just life events, traveling, moving after college, I lived in Asheville in the mountains of North Carolina for a while. Then I moved to South America. I lived in Chile for a year. I taught English there and did a lot of traveling as well, like Uruguay, Peru, Argentina. Wow. So it took a lot of photos during those times. I want to say it was about 2017. That was when I moved back to New York. I'm originally from New York and I moved back to New York. And I realized through all this kind of adjacent to the world of photography, but I realized through enjoying photography as a hobby, kind of self-teaching myself cameras and Adobe and things like that, that I wanted to build a career in graphic design. Kind of like, it felt right because I had been at that point 3 years out of college and I was doing like waitressing jobs. I was teaching English at one point. I actually worked in humanitarian aid too. I volunteered at a Syrian refugee camp in Greece for a little bit during kind of like the peak of the Syrian civil war. And I didn't really know. I was kind of exploring all these things, but didn't really know where I wanted to land. And then I kind of just took a step back and I was like, I've always been a visual person and maybe I can turn this visual affinity into a career. And I thought to myself, like, even if I do want to stay in humanitarian aid or I do want to stay teaching English, like, I can still like work for an organization where I make their graphics in-house or I work for an NGO. Yeah. Like, you know, I just felt like either which way I could combine my interests if I learn a bit more about how to do that. So I moved back to New York and I enrolled in a like kind of intensive design course. It was like 3 months, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily with homework and projects and things like that, and built myself a portfolio. And I was very dedicated to it, thankfully, and was very happy with the work that I created during that time. And I guess shortly thereafter, kind of coming back to photography, I got, you know, landed a role in graphic design, which is actually what I still do today, a little bit different. I'm an art director, but I work in news and I work with photographers and illustrators, which is very cool. And I get to also create things, work with other incredible creators and direct them. So I'm very blessed that I have a creative career. But in that kind of rediscovery of what I was doing and the beginning of landing my first design job, I decided to pick up film again. it was kind of just this, like, I'm back in New York. I'm back kind of like really grounding myself in a creative world, whereas for years I was exploring other interests and other career paths and things like that. So I was like, okay, I've been doing photography for a while. I also at that time felt kind of burnt out of my routine of like my DSLR and then popping all my photos in a Lightroom and presets and the, you know, I just was kind of felt like I hadn't created anything new in a long time. So I got an Olympus Stylus Zoom point and shoot.
Great cameras.
And I say Zoom, but the Zoom was actually broken. So I don't it was an Olympus Stylus Zoom, but the Zoom didn't work. Everything else worked. And I shot a couple rolls through it. And again, I kind of felt like the results came back and they were underwhelming to me. I was like, where are all the cool light leaks and the, trying to, I guess, replicate all the cool things that I had been doing in a more manual way through editing on film. So at first I wasn't entirely in love with what was happening. I was just, I think, using like ColorPlus or I don't know, Ultramax potentially was like some of the first rolls that I shot. And then I was like, wait, there's all these like cool experimental films with, like, and I actually shot like Lomo Purple and Double Bubble, kind of like, I don't know the stock, but these kind of experimental film stocks. And I was like, wait, this is kind of more, we're getting somewhere.
It's getting warmer. And then getting warmer.
You know, we're getting somewhere, as opposed to like, some people will be like, that's really deviating away from somewhere. But
yeah,
I think it was getting somewhere. I was like, okay, yeah. I have a vision. And I got my first SLR, my first film SLR, which I think that was the turning point, because once you have the manual controls, you can really get the results that you want. You're not working as flat as you are with a point and shoot. And I got a Minolta XG1, which to this day is the SLR that I use. I've had to get a new lens for it since the last one broke, but it has lasted me almost a decade now.
Wow.
And it's a wonderful camera, just completely manual, no built-in light meter or anything like that, no automatic shutter or anything, but I just started loving it. The results that I was getting from that camera and being able to just do everything manual was such a treat. And that really propelled me into being an analog photographer. Like, once I touched that camera, I really didn't pick up my DSLR ever again. I was
Isn't that funny?
This is it. And it wasn't just about the result. You know, obviously, I really enjoy, I think we all do, really enjoy the visual results that you get from film. And also, in that aspect, also the unexpected. And it's always kind of, I don't know what I'm going to get. And that's part of the joy of it.
Yeah.
And that every frame is always unique, right? You can't take the same photo twice. And I really love that. Like, I was on my DSLR taking like 500 snaps a minute. And now I have to kind of slow down. And I also know, like, whatever I take, it's not going to be replicated, which is really has just a sense of individuality to it and really connects you with the medium.
Damn.
I love that. I'd never thought about it like that before.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I thought about it a lot, especially as I was working with these kind of experimental film stocks, because I was getting results from that. I'm like, no other photo will ever look like this.
Right.
Like, this is a one of a kind, which is really special. And that is something that's also perpetuated more by just not just experimental, but also using like expired film stocks. Like, just every roll that you use is its own physical capsule that shoots the way it does. And you're never really going to be able to, you know, some detriment, but you're not going to be able to get the same results ever twice. You can try your best depending on, you know, your equipment and the stocks you use. But I really loved that. I was like, this is cool. I can really do things that are unique and different. And I shot with that SLR for a while. And in that time, I had also purchased a Polaroid 600 box camera. If you know those, they're a little finicky. Like, it's, you know, up in the draw, mostly need to use flash unless you're in like harsh daylight. And I got some cool results, but I was kind of like, I didn't fall in love with that medium. I was like, okay, like, this is fun for like on the side, but I can like really control what I'm doing with the SLR. So I'm just going to keep to that. And, you know, my next step up was getting a medium format. I got a Yashica 1.2 format G, a 6x6. And I was really loving that for a while. And that was 2019. And so obviously shortly thereafter, 2020 hits. And, you know, my job that I was working at that time, 5 days a week, full time, goes fully remote, as the whole world did.
Yeah.
And I picked up my Polaroid box camera again. I was like, okay, well, I don't know. Like, I'm just going to try this again. And I started getting really into that, and I wanted more control over what I did. And so very shortly thereafter, I purchased a Polaroid Now, the first generation that to this day, I still am angry at Polaroid, because they had that version out for a very small amount of time before they realized that the fatal flaw was not having a built-in, what's it called, for an area to screw a tripod in. Tripod mount, thank you. There's no tripod mount on that camera.
And I remember that,
I was like stacking it on like boxes and books. Oh, God. But, you know, I started to be able to play around with double exposure and self-portraiture using a timer. And that was the big turning point for me. I was like, okay, this is it, actually. I think getting the physical Polaroid in your hand seeing that it's like actually what you want. And it's better than what you could have conjured with any other camera possible. And it's sitting in your hand. Like, that was the turning point. I was like, there's nothing better than this. And so I was shooting with that now for a while, the Polaroid now. And then I want to say like 3 months later, I got an SX70. I was like, we're moving on.
Yeah.
We're moving on. Actually, no. You know, before I purchased an SX70, I borrowed one from Kyle Depew at Brooklyn Film.
Kyle! What up, Kyle?
I was like chatting with him. I was picking up film from him and I was like, yeah, I really want to shoot. And he was like, I have one that like doesn't have a skin on it. And like, we're in the process of like getting it fully up to par. But like, if you want to shoot with it for a bit, like you're welcome to. And I was like, okay, sweet. And so I shot with that for like a couple months, maybe, or a month. I like got kind of used to that. And then I was like, all right, buy my own. It's time. The first SX70 that I got was a sonar, which was really exciting after having shot with like an alpha that wasn't a sonar, because I was like, this is really cool that I can do more self-portraiture. I got kind of a shutter release cord and I was able to work with that. And that was thrilling for me. I was like, okay, we're finally like, we're checking all the boxes now.
Yeah.
Like, self-portraiture, which I had been wanting to do for a while, but we didn't really have the mechanical gear to do so. I have way more control over the photos I'm taking. I'm getting the effect that I want by shooting on Polaroid stock that is beautiful in itself, and the chemistry is always amazing and ever-changing. And then I can have the photo in my hand. So, like, you can't ask for much more, you know, at that point.
No.
And that really set me off for, like, the journey thereafter until today, which has been primarily in shooting Polaroid. But also, I still dabble. I always carry around an MJU2. That's my point and shoot that I shoot with. Nice. And I bought my, like, tier one camera in that heavy pandemic time as well, which was a House of Loud 500cm.
Oh, damn.
Yes.
It had to happen. And I think what really propelled that move, though, is that I love shooting square.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I know that I love shooting square. I have a Yashica. It was, you know, giving me great results, but, you know, not the same flexibility at all as far as like focal point or closeness or anything. And I was like, this is an investment that's going to be worth it because I know that I love this medium and I love this format and I want to do this. So it was really my love of Polaroid that got me to like pull the trigger on that.
Yeah.
And those are the main cameras I use today. That SX70 sonar and the Hasselblad, the MJU2 and the Minolta XG1 that I started with as my first SLR. But, you know, more on the point of Polaroid, as like my love for Polaroid grew, I started wanting to essentially go back to my roots of replicating my weird Instagram photo editing app experiments. I was like, how do I get back to this aesthetic, this, you know, this colorful joy that I was having prior to this entire journey of all the money and time and, you know, back and forth and trial and error that I've gone through. And that is what led me to playing with Polaroid manipulations.
See, that's a road I need to go down. I need to start messing with that stuff.
Oh gosh, it is.
There's
like
so many things you can do too, right?
That's what it is. I mean, I still feel there's so much floating around in my head all the time of like just weird things that I want to try doing that I'm like, I might get chemical burns or like ruin my album, but I also might get a really cool photo. But it is a very special world, and that was, I think, once I discovered that, started playing with that, I felt like I have landed. This is where I am. This is the pinnacle for me. Like, I don't want to ever move from here. Mm. And I've just been kind of building on that ever since. Playing with different chemical soaks, so chemical manipulations, working with different other types of like physical manipulations, like even just like crumpling and like, you know, messing with the photo as it's developing, or I've used like torches and weird flames. I've like placed my Polaroids on radiators and light fixtures and all kinds of, you know, I've also done emulsion lifts as well, which are big too. I've like less navigated in that way, but I also enjoy that too. It's just a, kind of a little bit of a different result.
Yeah.
I've worked with paint and tinfoil, and transparencies is a huge one. So.
Yeah, that's one that I always want to mess
with. What's that? Is that where you take off the...
Yes. So you transparencies you can only do with like a black and white film.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, yes, you peel the like, it's not really positive or negative, but like the top layer away from the top plastic layer away from the chemical layer.
Yeah.
And it, I find that the results are best when you do it like as the photo is developing or very shortly thereafter.
Okay.
And it's a very kind of meticulous process of like you're rolling the plastic off in a very tight way so as to not keep residue, because you can't get residue off after. So like a really, really clean transparency where like you don't see any remnant of the background is like takes a little bit of like suave manipulation.
Yeah.
But then you're free to roam. You have this like photo that you can put on any background and overlay with any item. And
I have to do it.
Yeah. It's really, really cool. So I love doing that. I very recently... I kind of have like a personal tradition where I do a birthday self-portrait every year. So for this piece, I did a transparency and I played around with like multicolor paint and tinfoil. And I like created a little bit of like a some sort of design with that and like overlaid transparencies on it. And the results were really cool and fun. Like you never know like how it's going to turn out ultimately. And I will... also preface that by saying like there have been many Polaroid manipulations that have failed. Like by fail, I mean like they did not come out remotely the way that I wanted to, sometimes in positive way, sometimes completely in negative way. Like just the photo is quote unquote ruined or like just undistinguishable. The colors got botched. Like, you know, it really just depends, but it's always an experiment. I even experiments that I have done multiple times and gotten good results from, you can do and still not get a good result.
Still fail. Yeah.
When did the film expire? What, like, I just, there's so many, what was the depth of the photo that you took? Like it, you never really know like how the chemicals are going to interact. It's always different, but that is kind of the fun of it. Cause it never gets old. Cause you're not doing, I think that's where I lost myself with digital. It was the same over and over. I take these photos. I pop the SD card in, pop them into Lightroom. I had my presets that I was always using.
Right.
Here, it's like I can do the same experiment multiple times over, but it's never going to be the same. So there's always room for new, which is the joy of working with polarized media.
You have to be a person with a certain amount of patience, because not only could it fail, but it also could like not even come out how you like hoped it would and just be like bummed out, you know? You have to be like, all right, well, okay, I know what I want. And I'm going to keep going till I get it. And, you know, so that's like, I don't know if I, could it be me? I don't know.
I think, it takes a lot of patience, and it also takes sort of a level of non-attachment.
Yeah, I feel like that's what would bum me out the most. Be like, damn, I ruined it, you know?
Yeah,
just being able to like go be a part of the process of like you're creating art in this moment, and you just have to like whatever's going to be is going to be.
Sometimes when like I can tell a photo is going to be, you know, a good result, like before I start manipulating it, just like a photo comes out and I'm like, this is a good one. I like get my scanner ready to go. Real quick, like super quick. So at least I have that first version, even if it's not fully developed, because like it takes a little, I'm like, I don't want to lose this. So like that sometimes is the, you know,
that'll help the sting. Yeah.
A little grounded. You're like, all right, well, I have a version of it scanned. Let's see what we can do now.
Oh, man.
Shai, have you ever thought about doing like little like how-to videos, whether YouTube or Instagram? Because I would love to learn.
I was just thinking that too. Yeah.
There was one of those big accounts on Instagram had asked me to do like some blog posts for them. But it kind of, we life happened.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen, but it was going to be kind of a series on Polaroid manipulations.
Yeah.
But yeah. I've definitely thought about it. I'm not super into the video, like videographer world, but I definitely do some like writing or write-ups or, and something that I have just been doing even without that completely in mind is I've been posting a lot of like BTS of my, like when I post photos like on my grid now, for instance, like if you swipe, you'll usually see something of like, how did I set this shot up? Or was there like a different element that I added in? I mean, it's not always, but I've definitely started to do it more because I'm realizing a lot of posts that I like, a lot of my sharing of my photos over the years, I haven't done that. And I kind of wish I did because it also is like a joy for me to be able to look back on.
Yeah, you can go back. Yeah, totally. So
that is definitely something that I would be interested in doing more of. And I'm always excited to chat about it with other people. Like I've definitely people message me and say like, I really love this. Like, how did you do it? And I always caution them like, there isn't really like a step-by-step manual, but like I can share with you like some things to try, you know? But I'm always happy to discuss that. I think like the more we keep the Polaroid medium alive, the better. And then especially if we're pushing it to its limits or, you know, thinking of it and using it in a way that's different or unique or out of the box. Like, I just think that's such an exciting thing for the medium and the community to be doing. So
have you done any Polaroid lifts lately? I heard they changed because they changed some things that they're not as easy as they used to be. Is that true? Or did I make that up?
That has been true for a long time. I don't know if it's like with a recent change that's made it even more true. But the older stocks did used to lift much easier. Yeah. Like I was buying like Polaroid originals like before Polaroid reemergence. And those lifted easier. And then when Polaroid came out, it was lifting less easy. And that was kind of a known thing. Like it's harder.
Yeah. That's I have still heard that. Yeah.
Viewable. It's not like, oh, you can't do it anymore. I mean, unless something has happened, I'm not aware of.
No, I think it probably is from that time that they switched.
Yeah. So it has, I think, just because of the way they built it. But it is definitely still doable. I have found that in more recent lifts, one of my tricks is I use like a clear nail polish once I've set it onto a surface because the corners start rolling up sometimes as it's drying. And there's really no way to get that back once it's dry to dry. So so I learned to do that.
See, tips and tricks. You need like a whole tips and tricks video.
I don't think anyone, I think that was just a personal, I just was like, oh, let me try to like put something on here. And I thought about doing like Mod Podge, but I think it would be like aggressive on the photo. So my solution was just a little bit of clear nail polish on the edges.
Love it.
Wow. Yeah.
That's perfect.
Cool. You're getting me inspired of like, I want to like, it's been like 5 or 6 years since I've done a lift. I think it was like that around that time. And I want to do one of those again.
It's definitely still, I mean, it's something like I said, I don't do much, but I love and appreciate the art. I mean, my favorite is like pre-lift when you just have it like the photo rolling around and like transposing into different shapes and sizes. So I think it's just a beautiful process in itself, no matter what the result is. But it is, it's, I think, an easy enough way to get started into doing manipulations. And with practice on a few of them, you're bound to get a result that you like, you know, it's doable. It just kind of a very sensitive, delicate process, but that's
about stress. Like I'm like, the whole time. No, don't crinkle all the way over.
And that's again, the high stress of like, you're not going to have that photo again as it was.
Yeah, exactly.
You could scan it before you start doing that. So again, that's my little like, I was going to say like my trust fund of photos, like my little, like my safe, you know, just like, I know that they're somewhere and now like whatever happens to it physically, like let it be.
Wow.
Do you see yourself shooting more color or black and white? Like what's your to go to with the Polaroid stuff?
Color by far. I think I shoot. I think the color component of it is that I just, again, from the very get-go of like honing into my visual identity, it all came through like color, right? Through working with a lot of color. Like I was doing, actually, right behind me. I know listeners won't
be asking. Oh, it's so pretty. I've been looking at it this whole time.
This is an early Instagram like photo editing app picture that I took. It's like of a of the like, cherry blossoms, and then I like imposed like a crazy gradient sky onto it.
But, love it. Love it.
Like working with that type of stuff, just like really pushing color and pushing kind of like, I would call it like psychedelia, like is very heavy in my inspiration. So obviously with color, I'm able to achieve that more. I think some people are also able to achieve that with color, I mean, with black and white in their own way. But I tend to go less grunge with my photos and more kind of light and airy, you know, more floral inspired, more nature inspired. So that leads me to, you know, the world's natural color. And then I'm like, all right, now how do I push this times a million and like distort it?
I love Polaroids so much. I've just been ever since.
We were
since...
just talking about this before you got on. He's got a stack like this big.
I've just been shooting again like crazy. And I try to, I always fall back on the black and white because it's so easy to shoot. I don't know if that makes sense, but it just, for me, it's so easy. Like you don't have to worry about, I feel like the film develops so much faster. I feel like it's not as temperamental as the color film is. Then when I do, I went back and bought, I don't know, it was a couple months ago, I bought like a five or six packs of the SX70 film because I haven't shot it in so long and it was finally back in stock. And then to find out that it's got like an ND filter on it, it's not the same film that it used to be and all this stuff. And I was like, well, I wonder if it's still, I've always had better luck with the SX70 film. Like I used to say it all the time on here back in the day, like I would much rather shoot that than the 600 film because the 600 film just always looked more washed out or it was temperamental or something. I always had some sort of an issue with it. And again, it's the same film as the 600 supposedly. And but I'm still getting these like wonderful results with the SX70 film over the 600 with an ND filter on it. Like I'm just, I feel so much better.
Do you think that's, do you feel the same way?
Absolutely, yeah. So the SX70 film is kind of known to, it's a higher contrast film. So as far as like the way you're describing 600 as being more washed out, I mean, the ISO on an SX70 film is 100. But if you're shooting in the correct conditions, like you're getting really high contrast results.
Yeah.
Which are
so beautiful.
Which can be very, very beautiful. Like I am thinking of a specific shoot that I shot of my friend Sarah on my old rooftop, and we had like the clouds behind her and she's wearing like a black tank top, but it's like popping against her eyes and the clouds. And
love it.
I, in that same moment, like I ran out of SX70, popped in a 600, and yeah, the results are lighter. Not, I wouldn't say washed out, but it's just, just not as high contrast. And I think it's tricky. I have seen people try to replicate that result in different ways. Like, so if you're using SX70 film with an ND filter in an SX70 camera and then actually manipulating the exposure wheel to go opposite the way you think it should. You're kind of like creating your own ND filter on top of an ND filter, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And sometimes that will yield a bit more of what an SX70 film yield will be.
So
I've seen people do that. I've also seen people do, I'm sure you're familiar with Mint. They have these very like kind of additives that you can put onto your SX70. So there's like one that like you can manually number wise control.
Yeah, like shutter speed and stuff.
And the exposure. So that also can help you kind of tweak your results and get more of that look.
Yeah.
But it is, we are at the behest of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is true. But there's ways to, you know, work with it and see how to get the results that you want, which again are never going to be the same, but
I know.
I think striving for the type of look you want will lead you in other directions and you'll find other ways to shoot it that are going to be enjoyable too.
Also, before you just got on, Timothy also just pulled the trigger on a box of, was it the black and white or color pull
apart?
Yeah,
black and white 3000B peel apart.
Sure. I haven't shot it in a while, but I have a my good friend and also, I think, previous guest of this podcast, Nick Collingwood.
Nick.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, Nick.
He this was a few years back. I had a Land Camera 250 and it broke, which is typical of a Land Camera 250. It worked really nicely for like a few packs of pack film. And then it just broke and was unfixable. And I needed a camera to shoot, and I borrowed from Nick a like Polaroid 110 modified AB. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's like,
what is that?
It's meant to shoot 4x5, but it's modified to take pack film.
Oh, geez.
And I borrowed his, shot a bunch of 3000V, loved the results, and then I bought my own. I found a guy. I was like, I'm never gonna find this camera again. And then I found this guy who was selling this exact modified Polaroid 110. And I was like, what? Very cool. Because it's like, I mean, they're not really usable anymore, right?
Yeah, I pulled it up. I've seen them.
It's just so with that, I got some great results of 3000B. But I have some, you know, I have my fridge stock that just sits untouched. And in there, I have some gems too. I have some 3000B. I have some, obviously, FP100C. I have some 669.
Oh, it's my favorite Polaroid film.
And then my like holy grail, I need to use this because I'm afraid, but I have a couple packs of Time Zero S670. I know. But I'm like, by the time I pull this out, I'm going to be mad at myself. But I just like, in my head, I'm like, I'm going to find the perfect thing to shoot with this.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
The perfect way. But of course, like, who knows? It's sitting there, though. It's like, it's just collecting freezer dust, but no, it's in my fridge, but you know, it's just sitting in the cold isolated box, and we'll see when I pull it out.
We all have one of those in the back of our freezers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
The special.
Yeah. I just pulled a box of 100C to show. I work with a 16-year-old kid at the music store I work at, and he's really into Polaroid. I gave him a Polaroid now and a couple packs of film, and I've given him like a Mamiya C220 like to shoot, and you know, I've really keep like forcing photography down his throat all the time. But I was like, you want to see something really cool? I'll bring in a box of peel apart and we'll have some fun with that. And he, because you know, it's either that or I'm gonna let it sit in my fridge until it turns to dust and the world ends. And I've never shot. I was like, oh, I could have, but
you're not,
you know,
wrong.
So to like have him, I'm like, okay, so I'm gonna have you peel this, you know, like peel it. And he's like, well, you know, everybody at work was blown away, and these are old heads that, you know, remember this technology.
Yeah,
and they
exactly.
were still just blown away by it. They're like, I can't believe that's still around. It's like, it's not.
It's not.
I was like, it's not. Don't get it twisted. But
that's amazing. I mean, the first time I saw a peel apart photo, I was like, my brain like exploded. Like, I could not believe. And isn't it, it's just funny to think about that too. It's like, that was the standard before where we are now, but it's still way, in my opinion, way more novel than anything we've done.
And
we've talked about this on the show before. Like, that was like test film. Like,
yeah,
they
was,
would just go in the garbage
exposure.
After. Like, cool, all right, looks good, garbage. And now we're like, oh, I'll pay $150 for one pack that may not work. You know,
that's basically where I got into it too late. I think I bought my first pack of pack film in 2020. So it was about those $100 packs.
Like, yeah.
And do I have any regrets? No, but
no.
I'm still like, I've become a bit more fiscally aware of that cost.
Crazy.
And I haven't shot pack film in a while, honestly, which is upsetting because I bought that modified Polaroid 110 that I was really into, and I haven't used it in a hot sec. It's just kind of sitting in a box.
I feel like that'll forever be photography's one like big heartbreak, that
it
technology
is
just unsavable. And like, I remember when it was $9 a box and I was like, cool, I'll buy five, like whatever, you know.
Now
here we are today, like scouring the internet for boxes that have been hopefully stored properly and all this. And
we're going to hit a day, like, unfortunately.
I know.
Yep.
I know.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I know there's some guys working at, I think it's Super Sense. They're working on, you know.
Yeah, the one instant. I have a couple
instant,
boxes of that, too.
Right. But
and I backed the kit. They made a kit where you put the pods together and you do the whole thing. So I bought that. I think it's like 7 or 8 shots. I backed that when that came out. I always try to, any hope and glimmer, I will give, I will drain my bank account for pack film just because it's,
I'm with you.
It's magic. It's magic.
It's funny, like to this day, anytime like the official Polaroid account makes like an announcement, like new item, everyone in the comments is like, it's like, it's been like we're hitting on like a decade without production of it. Like,
I know.
It's God. I'm also of the opinion of just like, we gotta at least cherish what we have as well. I'm like, 8x10 still even being
produced. It's very true. It's very true.
We
are very lucky that a lot of stuff has been saved and resurrected and all this. So all is not lost.
All is not lost
in that sense.
But yeah, pack film. I think that's the other thing too, is like something that I love about pack film, not just the way that everybody else loves it. I think we all agree at how incredible a medium it is. But I also am enjoying using expired packs because I'm getting those crazy, kind of colorful results out of them that are, again, extremely one of a kind. And that's very, very special. Very, very special.
So are you going to put these one of a kind pieces of art into a book or a show or something anytime soon?
It's a great question.
I'm a huge fan of your work, and I would love to like be able to
appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Yeah,
I've had an idea for a book floating around for a while, more focused on my self-portraiture, but
love
kind of narrating some chapters of my life with that. It's taken like its ebbs and flows, like I alluded to earlier, but I to say it's been a few years since I've felt as motivated as I once did with my photography. Again, I had a very stringent, like, I'm never monetizing this and I don't want to do. And I know that comes obviously from a place of privilege. I was employed and able to support myself in other ways, but I just felt like if I don't have to do it for money, if I don't have to do anything that's not coming from my heart, then I am not going to. And I kind of stuck with that for a while. So it really propelled me into just like my own, whatever is my own personal interest and desires, what I will pursue. And if I'm not feeling it, I'm not feeling it. So it kind of has, it's like a double-edged sword because no one's there to push me to create anything. But then again, when I really want to, I'm fully in control of the creative vision and can execute it how I want. But it's been a few years actually that I've felt as motivated. I think part of it is tied to grief and personal loss. Like I lost my mom in 2021. And it's interesting as she was sick for 8 months before she passed. And during that time, I was shooting a lot unrelated to, you know, her family. It was just like personal, kind of a real personal outlet, personal catharsis. And after she passed, and this, I only kind of noticed this on my own accord a while after that I really stopped shooting the way I used to, probably about like 3 or 4 months after she passed, I just like stopped picking up my cameras. And I think like navigating my own grief and my own challenges just put me in a creative rut, which is not unheard of course. But everyone in my life was like, don't worry, it's going to come back to you. Like things are cyclical. And I felt the same way too. But time just kept passing. And I was like, I love photography. I love this medium. I love creative outlets. I love expressing myself in this way. Why am I not? There's a disconnect between like what I want and what I'm actually doing. But I look back now and I think it really was just grief and navigating life. And that said, I think just about a year ago now, I have gotten back into swing of things, which I'm very grateful for because I thought it would never happen. And I was like, I don't want to lose this. And I also have the New York film community to thank for that, and my film photo friends and people who just
shout out continue
to host gatherings and events and get me out there. And I'm really just very grateful for that. Policon the last couple of years as well. And so I think all of those things combined have kind of propelled me back into this making mode. And, you know, and something I've learned through that is also this, like, photography will always be there for me. And I'm always at my core going to be who I am. And it's, you know, kind of a more, this is more existential now, but it does relate to being a creative, I think, because I think a lot of creatives struggle through ruts of just, you know, lack of inspiration and other other potential life reasons where they can't fully commit themselves to their art. But I've noticed that just in times where I come back to it, I'm still there, right? I'm still able to have those ideas that I used to have and have that spark that I used to have and produce images that I used to produce or even better or different than I used to do just with my life experience and passion. So I think that's always a good reminder for a creative to have is like it, it's there for you when you need it. And, you know, you don't have to force it. It'll always be there for you because of just your natural inclination to be an artist and mediums you've found that have supported you along the way. You know,
that's so beautiful
and very relatable.
It like, is beautiful and something that we've talked about a bunch on the show that is, I love hearing people's when it found them stories. Like we asked for the, how did it give us a background? And like everybody's story is different, but like, I love that moment when it happened and like where it takes these people and you included, like, and I feel that way for myself, you know, like, I don't know what I would do without it. And it does feel like an old friend, like when it's not there, but then it's comes back to you. It's like, ah,
yes,
I love you. You're back.
The old friend metaphor is so, so on the nose because that is how it is. It's like, I know you like and you're still where I left you. Like, definitely.
I mean, this is. Been just what I need right now.
Honestly, same.
And it feels like always is like talking to other creatives just is the best. And thank you again.
And just like reflecting on the beauty of this medium and the people you meet through it and where it takes you in life. Definitely. It's reinvigorating, it's honestly.
It really is. Every time we do this, I'm always like, all right, I got to go out and shoot. I'll see you guys later.
Well, you just, I'll tell you in the moment, you've inspired me. I want to do Polaroid lifts of my boys.
Oh, yes.
That'd be like a cool project.
That would be amazing.
I love having like a project. Like, okay, I got to go buy the tray. I got to buy the brushes. I got to, you know, like, but that's part of it. That's part of like the fun of it, getting all the stuff.
That is it. That's how you act on the inspiration the best way is like when you can kind of, I love that. Like when you have a project, because that is how it is. It's like, okay, I'm going to do this now. What are all the things that I need? When do I do it? What do like, I love that because that really grounds you as well. It's not just like sometimes walking around aimlessly with a camera will also inspire you. But sometimes it is really about like having a project that gets you there, you know.
We'll be right back with listener question for Shy right after this message from our sponsor.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. We've done a bunch of these already. They're a ton of fun. We talk shop. We laugh. It's just a blast getting to hang out with you guys. And like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. Thanks, guys.
All right, everybody. This is part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners. And this question comes from Jen IRL. Great. Great username. Love that. And they ask, what has been your favorite part of working with Polaroid as a medium?
Awesome.
I'm interested too, because I love when people have like a specific medium and I want to know why.
So many favorite parts, but absolutely. Yeah. I think I can like more concisely close out like, you know, my journey to finding Polaroid with this, which is, I think more than anything, it is like the number one reason, I guess, if I had to order them chronologically, would be being able to hold the physical photos in my hand. I think there's nothing like it. I similarly enjoy film for that reason, being able, obviously, to hold your negatives. And I don't remember who I spoke to about this, but I remember talking to someone else in the Polaroid world, and we were just talking about how 50, 100 years from now, all those 1,000 digital photos that you took in 5 minutes on your DSLR. Bye-bye. Where are those going to be? Are they going to even live somewhere? Is the cloud
trapped on
gonna...
a hard drive? They're trapped on my hard drive.
Is that hard drive going to be able to plug in anything? Like, you know, there's a lot of questions there, right? Whereas these Polaroid photos are going to stand the test of time. And even on that note, my grandparents on my dad's side recently passed, but we were going through their old things in their apartment and we found a Polaroid of them from the 80s sitting on a lawn together. And it was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. I couldn't believe how sharp and gorgeous the image was. Right. Like this many years late, 40 years later.
Yeah.
It wasn't even really faded or anything. It was just, it looks like a Polaroid I would have taken like last year. And that was just a testament to what I just said, which is just lasting the test of time and really not just that, encapsulating moments in time in such a visceral, physical way, I think is the most beautiful thing about Polaroid.
Well said. Well said. Great question. Great answer. so good. Now we have another part, but we have another question for you. This is
sure.
You may or may not know what it is, but it.
I might know.
Yeah, if you had to pick one camera to use for the rest of your life. You're trapped on a desert island, but there's film, batteries, camera shops, repair shops, whatever you need. What would it be and why?
Yes, for me, it's such a no brainer. Honestly, it's 1,000,000% my SX-70 sonar.
Wow,
there's no question about it. It's funny. Listen, the i2, and I do own one and I love it and I'm grateful for it, but it doesn't compare to me in so many ways. Way one is just simply the physical mechanics of the shutter and holding that camera. There's nothing better to me. And you lose that, you know, with the newer cameras. And this is debatable. I have had multiple debates with Ben Fraternel. In an instant, we have had like Instagram DM back and forth. I still stand by the photo quality that comes out of an SX-70 sonar. To me, is sharper and just more striking than anything else, in my opinion. Despite all the specifications and technicalities, I stand by that. You can also get closer with an SX-70 than you can. It's not by much, but it's enough to make a difference. And for the type of photography I do, which is very close-up self-portraiture or like nature shots, where I want to get like on a leaf of a plant or something like that, like that makes all the difference. So it would 100% be my specific SX-70 sonar that I've had to repair twice. But
amazing.
Yeah, it's definitely my daily driver. The sonar is just, and you have to worry about focus. I mean, not that focusing's hard with like an alpha, you know, it's really not, but autofocus, and it's like really good autofocus.
And not only that, what's lovely is like you can turn that off. So right.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
The autofocus is fantastic. And then if you want to go manual, you can also do it. So you have that option, which is great. And the noise, just the sound. I can't let go of the sound. Like the sound of the sonar focusing is so wonderful.
It is. We need to make a song.
Yeah, we need a backing track. Like
Okay, second part of the question. Is there anything that is your white whale right now? Anything you're lusting after, having dreams about, scrolling eBay about?
I feel like my white whale was my Hasselblad before I got it. And that owning that, I just feel complete. But I did have a digital white whale, which I haven't touched digital in a long time. But I last summer when I was getting back into my creative groove again, I wanted to shoot concerts, which was something I actually used to do in 2014 with my first DSLR. Forever, I always wanted a Mark III or Mark IV, a Canon, just like full frame. Mm. And I did finally buy one. I have only picked it up a couple of times. Yeah. But something about it is like, it's satisfying my younger photographer self, like actually owning it, because I lusted after it for so long before actually living it. So knowing that I have it makes me really happy. But I will say there is one specific camera that I would love to own. I need to pull up the actual, like, the creator of this. So it's a Leica M7, but it is custom painted. I'm sure you might have come across this incredible. It's custom painted by this guy in Japan. It is Shuedo Camera.
Oh, yeah.
Took this M7 and custom painted it lavender.
Is it the pink one? Yeah, dude.
And I have seen this specific camera circulate multiple times on my feed. And I'm like, I'm not one for rangefinders generally. And I'm not like a Leica, like some people are so like ride or die on the world. But seeing this camera all of the details that were put into it, I'm like, I need to own this.
I mean, for it's just for your aesthetic.
Exactly. Like, it needs to match all of my purple and lavender loving things. and it's just having something so custom is such a joy. I have another very, very custom SX70. It's an Alpha that was completely, like, the body was redone, spray painted, custom cover. By I don't know if you're familiar with Essex Ivy, Ivan. Mm-mm. He makes like custom skins and custom cameras. I feel as though, and I know other people might not be able to see this, but I feel as though I need to show you it. It is.
Yeah, we'll post it. Send a photo of it, and we'll post it.
Yes. Okay. I'm like, I want you to see it and appreciate how incredible and beautiful this thing is, but. This owning something like this was also a white whale for me for a long time.
Oh, get out of town. Look at that. Ooh, look at that.
Come on.
Wow.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's really something. It's like, so absolutely. I'll send you a photo of this too. But, that was owning something like this was a white whale of mine. So all that to say, I'm pretty satisfied except for this one very particular camera from this guy that I need to own.
Man. I wonder what she charges.
Yeah, is there a price list on that M7?
You gotta get the M7, then you gotta get it over there.
Yeah, I don't have any idea, honestly. I don't even want to guess because it's like one of those things. I have no idea.
Yeah,
whatever it costs, like one day, I'll have to be able to afford it.
Yeah, a true white whale.
Man. Yes, true white whale.
Chai, this has been amazing. Like I said, it's been a minute since we've been able to do one of these, and thank you for being patient with us. I'm so glad we finally got you on. And also so glad you're back. I'm sorry you went through that difficult time, but I'm glad that photographers found you again because we need your art, definitely, as much as you do. So thank you.
Honestly,
where can everybody check you out? Where's your Instagram? Plug yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Instagram. It's kind of a long, difficult to spell username, but it is my first name, Shy, my full first name, Cheyenne Higgins. So like instead of shenanigans, it's Cheyennegans. So
love it.
It has been my handle since I was like 15. It's Cheyennegans. And I'm that everywhere. My website is also Cheyennegans or Cheyenne.me. And that's really it. I'm not as much on other outlets, but you can find me on Instagram mostly.
Fantastic. Timothy, where are you?
Instagram, Threads, at Timothy Makeups, timothymakeups.com. Some stuff on YouTube. Just go to the search bar, Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of videos I did 175 years ago. I believe that's it for me. Chris, where are you?
I am Crispy Photo, also on all the things. And we are Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. Oh, and Threads, too.
Yep.
Yep, that's it.
That's it.
That's it, and that's all. Shy, thank you again.
Yay,
listeners,
thank you so much
for listening, and thank you for hanging in with us. We love doing the show. So thank you.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
We'll see you next time. Bye.
All right. That's going to wrap up this week's episode. First off, Chris and I would love to thank Shy for coming on this show. Like Chris said, it was a long time coming. Super excited to talk with you. Very, very inspiring episode. And we just love, love, love what you're doing. You got to keep us posted if you put a book or a show together. We're keeping our eye out. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon-only development hang nights over there and a bunch of stuff in the archives. Like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show, and we cannot express how much the Patreons that we have mean to us. You guys are everything, and we don't know what we would do without you guys. All right. That's it. Thanks again, Shai, for coming on the show. Guys, thanks for tuning in and listening. Yeah, we're back. And just in case you didn't notice, we are doing a bi-weekly release just to try to stay more consistent and, you know, make it a little easier for us to be more consistent, like I said. But yeah, so we'll see you guys in a couple weeks with a brand new episode. All right, later.